Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Big Ticket, Variety and iHeart's movie podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. This week, three stars of It Chapter 2. First up, Bill Hader, followed by James McAvoy, and then Pennywise himself, Bill Skarsgård. It's all about It Chapter 2 on today's The Big Ticket. Stick around.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care.
Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Now, here's Bill Hader. So, were you an It fan from, like, way back when? Did you ever read the book?
Yeah, I liked it when I was read it in high school. And then I saw the miniseries when I was in middle school.
What do you remember of the miniseries?
The spider. And then, everybody liked Tim Curry. It was just, he was so good in that. Yeah, it was amazing.
So when they called you and said, hey, we're putting together the sequel to the $700 million blockbuster, It.
I didn't say that. Ridley, no one ever talks about numbers on these things. They just kind of go like, hey, would you want to do this? You know, it's always, we don't see it. No one ever looks at it that way. But, I didn't really know how big of a hit the first one was until we started doing press for it.
Really?
Yeah, it was like, I just knew I liked it, but I don't really pay attention to that stuff. So it wasn't until we were doing press and people told us, like, well, it's the biggest R-rated horror movie or whatever.
And of I'm all like, time.
Wow. That's crazy.
So Finn puts it out there that he wants you to play him, the adult version.
Yeah.
So you get the call. So then do you sit down with Finn? Do you try to, like, study his mannerisms?
No, not at all. No. I saw the movie. I saw it in the theater, and then I watched it again on the plane on the way to Toronto. It happened to be on the plane. So I sat and watched it again, and then that was about it. And so much of it is, casting or them seeing something in us that helps it. And that was why I enjoyed doing it.
So tell us, chapter two begins. Where's Richie at? Where is he in his
life? Richie's a stand-up comedian. He's actually doing quite well. Gets the call from Mike, and he's like everybody. He's forgotten about what happened to him 27 years ago or what happened to everybody. And going back and seeing Mike is kind of what brings it all back.
What is it? What does it represent?
I think it's just fear, and also I always find it's this weird insecurity thing, but also like the worst things that have happened to you that have defined you, and how you have to kind of get past that. I think everybody has something.
What was Richie's?
Well, I think Richie had an issue. Especially growing up in a small town and everything with his sexuality, and I think he liked, and I think the real first time he ever actually felt love for somebody was Eddie, in his own way of dealing with it. And like a lot of comedians, you're really funny, but you your comedy, use comedy as a boundary between other people and also as a boundary in your own feelings, And there's probably something, like Pennywise says, I know your secret. It's a thing that he doesn't think anybody knows about. It's a thing he doesn't even understand about himself, probably. I think going back for him was having to kind of face that aspect of himself. And what's kind of tragic about the movie is that he can't really consummate that with the person he loves, and not just in a sexual way, but just in a actual emotional way. And hopefully he has a understanding of an acceptance of who he is.
Yeah. And tell me about that scene in the lake, just when all of you just crying.
That was.
Where'd you shoot that?
We shot that, want to say outside of Hamilton, Ontario, but it was freezing, and it was summer, and it was freezing, and we had a long talk about what the scene should be, and we were all sitting in water, and we were all freezing. I remember Jessica Chastain's lips turned completely blue.
And her fair skin.
We need to get her out of the water. And then Jessica was nice and got us B12 shots. And so we went up, and there was this doctor sitting there, and he gave us all B12 shots
because
we
were out in the cold. B12 shots work?
I don't know, but if it was a placebo, I don't know what it was. It was heroin. I'll just say it was heroin. I said B12, but it was all we all shot up after the thing. But it was fun. It was nice shooting that scene, and I hope people liked it.
What was your last day on set like?
Last day on set is actually my scene with Pennywise.
The woman you're running away from.
Yeah, that was my very last day on set. That was my day. It's like I shot that and then hightailed it to the airport and got on a plane back to LA. But I shot that. With Bill, and it was a blast. And then, my very first shot of the movie is hitting the gong and mm-hmm. saying this meeting of the Losers Club has begun. And then my last shot was when I get handed the pamphlet with my funeral service thing on. I look down on it, and I shot that, and then they were like, that's a wrap.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you know from the beginning that Richie was gay, or is it something that evolved?
That was something that we talked about when I arrived.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I learned about all this stuff about people thinking they're gay and not knowing if they're gay and that it was implied in the book. And then I think Stephen King said it was never, he never thought of it that way, but he likes the interpretation. And then, and I talked to Andy about it, and we had a long conversation, and we just decided, like, oh, let's just do it, you know.
And the film does, I talked to you a little bit about this the other night, the film really, as much as it's a supernatural and, you know, this crazy dancing clown, it's dealing with some really heavy issues.
Domestic violence.
Look at this opening scene.
And I guess it's based on a real event. Yeah. And I kind of like that because it was, you know, it's like, no, this is, now we're grown-ups now. And when you grow up, those kind of things are the things that scare you. It's not so much the monsters or whatever. It's like you see something on the news and you go, oh, gosh, if that happened to me, or worse, someone I love or I care about. Right. And, you know, now you go, well, now I can't go into that part of town anymore. Now when I leave a carnival, I need to go with like five friends. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, it changes your life, you know, because you're trying to avoid those things.
So what did you think the first time you saw Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise?
It was great. I mean, he's just a great guy. So it didn't really... It didn't really affect us too much, but we, you know, it was just like, oh, there's Bill, you know, and then mostly that how uncomfortable he was, and then that he never complained about it. I don't know how I would have been like, can I please take these contacts out or whatever? And he just, I mean, we shot on a soundstage with him for a long time for the ending, and I mean, they were pouring ice down his back. I remember they had just these big things of ice, and they were just putting it down his back.
Because he was so hot.
Wow. I mean, it was so hot on those sets, and he was just, I mean, it was just steamy and, oh my God.
Sounds glamorous.
Yeah, no, man. I mean, I remember PJ and I were all like, oh man, I'm going kind of crazy when we were shooting the whole end scene, because, you know, it was just long hours and those blinking lights mm-hmm. all day, and where it was easy to go a little cuckoo. Yeah.
Did they have a therapist on set to make
I should have. Yeah. No, we all started going like, oh my God, this is going nuts. You know. So we had a soccer ball, so we would run out in the back and just, you know.
That's how you blew up
with the crew and everybody, because the crew had it worse than we do. We have trailers and stuff.
Right.
And they're sitting there for hours and hours, and so these kind of, like, it wasn't soccer games, it was just kicking a soccer ball around, but it was fun.
And then Jessica just covered in that fake blood.
Yeah, and then she was really cold in the blood. And then she was cold, and the fake blood. So it was this thing of like, she's cold, you know, Bill's hot, you know, just trying to figure the whole thing out. But yeah, no, everybody had something that they were, you know, uncomfortable with, or, you know, I pulled a groin muscle and had to go to the doctor, and like,
was that from running from Pennywise?
Yeah, running from the big thing comes right out, and we all turn around and run.
And did you know you pulled it right?
Oh, when immediately. I just fell right down, and I was like, I just pulled my groin muscle. It was like, oh no. And I had to get an MRI on it. It stunk. They just
MRI and a pulled groin?
Or what you call it. Yeah, yeah. I did some sort of thing, and I was just like laying there, like, oh gosh, how did I do this?
So what is it about clowns?
I don't know.
I'm not scared of clowns.
I've never been afraid of clowns, but PJ had a good thing, which is that clowns are kind of the first thing when you're a kid that are funny and they play with you and everything. So if that thing turned out to be evil, if that thing was trying to get you, it psychologically, that nothing's safe, that
so
everything
like,
has
like
some ulterior motive.
Halloween, I go as a clown.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah,
it's
no.
Fun.
I've never been afraid of clowns. Insurance salesmen, I don't like them.
No, especially, yeah. But not when they're dressed as clowns.
No,
okay.
Yeah, when they're clowns, it's fine. I'm like, oh, you're not an insurance salesman.
So do you have your Emmy speech written?
No.
Why not? You gotta be prepared,
that.
No?
No. I don't know.
Because you have a good shot.
Everybody else is, you know, there's some great, you know, Eugene Levy and Ted Danson and all those people are pretty great. And I love Fleabag. I just think that show's amazing. So, everybody said it's just nice to be in the conversation, you know.
Did you expect when you were first, because Barry took a while to get made.
Yeah, it took 4 years,
yeah. Yeah, so how sweet is it to see the success?
Yeah, no, it's nice, especially with all these great shows on television, you know, to be
a part
of that is pretty... It's pretty great. I mean, mostly I think because we just start writing it, or I start working on it in 2 weeks, that, you know, you're just trying to keep track of the story, mm-hmm. and understand where all the characters are and stuff. So it's just the making of the thing is really exciting. And then all this other, you know, the award stuff is a great surprise, and it's a massive honor. And I mean, we, you know, getting to call Anthony Carrigan and telling him, like, hey, man, you got nominated for an Emmy.
So great.
And he was like, you know, he just couldn't believe it. You know?
So how many seasons do you see it going?
I don't know, man. Hopefully, I don't know. I don't want to put a number on it because I know it'll change. So,
but do you have the story thought out?
Yeah, well, there's something that we always knew that it needed to hit, and it was in our initial thought,
right,
like when we first talked about it. And we haven't gotten to that yet. And every season I write that on the board of like, okay, and then this happens. And then in season one, a bunch of story kind of pushed that off the mm-hmm. board. And then season two, I put it up there again. And then we came up with more story and it pushed it off the board again. So hopefully season three, we can get to that place. Right. And then we'll have a better idea of how much longer we got.
And Leslie Jones announced she's leaving SNL.
Yeah.
What's your advice to someone that weekend that they wake up and they're like, they're not doing it?
You know what? It was hard for me to watch it. It was really
it?
Hard for me. Yeah, I sat down, I got like popcorn. I was like, oh, I'm gonna watch it and the show, and it's gonna be great. And then it was watching your, Gaiman Poehler said it's like watching your own funeral. You just were like,
wow.
Well, I'm not there and everyone else is there and this is weird. And so I couldn't finish the episode, and I went and saw the movie Prisoners, which is really dark.
Wow.
So I went to a late screening of Prisoners. I go, I just need to get out of my house. And I went, because I was like, I'm feeling kind of sad. And I went to Prisoners and was like, what? This was a terrible light. This is, that's a great movie. But
did
I was
you
like,
read
this
the
is
long
so,
line?
I just like Denny, I can never say his name, Denny, phenomenal
yes.
director. And I was always excited about that, but I just went, what was I thinking? This is so dark, you know.
How long did it take you to finally be able to watch it comfortably?
Probably when I went back and hosted.
Really?
Yeah, it
wow.
took me a while. Yeah, it was hard to, just because it's like your house. It's
right.
like it's like your home, you know. So, but yeah, I love it though. Yeah.
Awesome. Bill, thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Always so
Thanks.
Great.
Yeah, thank you.
That was It Chapter 2 star Bill Hader. Now we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, it's James McAvoy. Find out what James told me about joining the IT family. Plus, he weighs in on the not-so-successful X-Men Dark Phoenix.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Welcome back. Here's James McAvoy.
Hello, Mr. James McAvoy.
Hello, how are you?
How you doing?
Good, man. Not too bad.
So did you see the first IT movie before you even started talking to them about this one? How did it all work out?
Yeah, briefly. I saw, I was doing X-Men. Me and Nicholas Holt went for burgers and movie night. And we saw IT Chapter 1. And then the next day I was in work doing a scene with Jessica Chastain. And she went, how did you feel about the movie? And I was like, I thought it was really good. She went, oh, that's good. And I went, why? She went, because she was like, I'm probably going to be the older Beverly, and the director really wants you for the older Bill. And I was like, yes.
So then ka-ching. Do you wait till they call you? Or you say,
well, you know what? You hear these things a lot in your career. People are always like, hey, you know what? I've got this great script for you. Or like, oh, I really want you to be the next Gandalf or whatever it is. Right. And you're like, oh, wow, great. And as years go by, you realize that unless you see yourself on the screen at the premiere, don't believe you're in the movie. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, so what role have you been told you were going to get that you didn't?
Oh, I actually had a meeting with a director who I later, when I was a bit more successful, was going to do a very, very big movie with. And then he fell out of that movie and another director did the movie in the end, and I didn't want to do it because it didn't work out in my family life at that point. But he directed something. It was only for a small part. It was just at the beginning in a flashback to play the younger version of, I think it was John Hurt. And we hugged and we had a great meeting. We cried in this meeting. As I'm walking out, I hear the director going like, you know what, I think we found our guy. I think we found our guy. So I phoned my agent. I was like, Ruth, I think I've got the part. I think it's like, he's going to call you. And all that. I've never heard from them. Never heard from
so
them.
So this was to play young John Hurt.
And then years later... I was going to do a big project with this guy. I had sat down and had dinner with him. He was like, it's so good to meet you finally. And I'm like, dude, listen, I've got a bone to pick
you. You called him out on
it. Oh, totally. He's a cool guy. He didn't mind me calling him out on it. Yeah.
So who was it?
I'm not telling you. Because then you know what
I'm
the
gonna
two films
I'm
going to
do a little detective work.
It's not fair to the other actors. But yeah.
So what is it about Pennywise, the dancing clown, that people just love?
Love and feel scared. Well, we love being scared. Whether it's the Tyrannosaurus Rex or it's a Pennywise Saurus Rex. We love being scared, you know. And he's just that extra level of creepy because there is just something about clowns. And I mean, maybe
I'm
some
not
people
that kind
like
of clown person. I'm fine. I dress as a clown for Halloween. Like
you
a
do?
Like a happy clown.
Yeah, I'm not into it. I'm always like, there's easier ways to look happy. There's less creepy ways to make me laugh. You're a grown man covering your face with a mask or makeup. What are you
you're
hiding?
You're really shaming
and
me
also,
right now, James. You're
and
really
also,
clown shaming
get a hold
me.
Of yourself. Tell a joke. Don't fall over in an exaggerated fashion. And then also, they're grubby. The costumes are always dirty and just slightly dusty.
I don't know what kind of clowns you're hanging out with, but my costume is clean.
I don't know, man. I'd take a deep look at it. I think it needs a deep clean. Hot wash.
So did you study Jaden to sort of try to get his mannerisms?
A little bit, yeah. From the movie. One of the weird things is that when you do any character, really, you generally create a backstory and a history. Mm-hmm. What was really unique about this whole process was that I had a whole movie that sort of provided me with visual memories of my character being played by another actor. And
I didn't have to invent those memories. They were there for me. Not just like in the material, like that, like literally actual there. Realized.
You had like home, you had like
music,
home videos.
With like beautiful scoring to tell me how I should feel about them. Do you know what I mean? All that stuff. It was cool. And I've never had that before. That was really cool. So yeah, it was also an opportunity to study Jaden. His openness really, one of Bill's greatest qualities is that he's incredibly open and vulnerable and quite at home with that, actually.
Where is Bill at when chapter two begins?
He is hugely successful novelist and screenwriter. It's seen as a bit of a middle-of-the-road kind of, you know, good yarn spinner, but maybe a bit of a hack as well. Like the rest of the losers, they've all gone on to become great successes in life, and yet none of them are quite satisfied, none of them are quite happy. They all feel like there's a hole that they can't fill, and that there's a trauma that they can't really fix, and they don't know what that is, because they can't remember Pennywise. He doesn't even remember Georgie, to be honest with you. He doesn't even remember that he had a stutter. He doesn't even remember any of that, so he has to go back to Derry. And if the first movie was a sort of coming-of-age tale and rites of passage tale for these children, I think in a weird way, us as a group of adults, we're regressing back into childhood. So within 5 minutes in the first scene of us all together, you know, we are coming at it much more like adults. Like, oh, you've got a fashion business, that's great. And then like 5 minutes later, we're telling each other, hey, screw you, fuck you, and like, you know, like throwing food at each other, you know. And I think that it's important for them to reconnect with the child inside, because they've been robbed of it by the glamour of Pennywise and the magic of Pennywise.
But also this movie, I mean, it's not just a horror movie that you go to and like jump out of your seat, which I did a lot. It's some serious subject matter. I mean, we're talking homophobia, domestic violence, suicide.
First like 7 minutes.
And let me tell you, that was tough to watch.
Yeah.
My husband and I turned away.
That was in that, you know, they weren't even going like, and Pennywise is pulling the strings. No. It was nothing. It was just like, that's America. That's our life. Pennywise hasn't even come in yet. Right. And the world is fucked. It's terrifying. And there's a darkness there. And that is one of the things that I think that Stephen King was writing. He doesn't just write about horrors.
Right.
He doesn't just write about the supernatural. He writes about small town America. He writes about America. He's fascinated by America and particularly that neck of the woods of America. And he was saying, you know, like Pennywise is here in this part of the world for a reason. Do you know what I mean? He's here in this little place. There is a darkness in Derry. And you know, if you like that the extension of that spreading out. But when I saw that, I mean, I'd read it, but when I saw just how unflinching Andy was in how he portrayed that, I mean, I was taken aback. But I think that's one of the reasons why I love the film, because whether it's the sentimental moments or whether it's the brutal moments, whether it's the romantic moments, whether it's the hilarious moments, of which there's many as well, or whether it's just the pure terror-inducing moments, he goes for it so hard all the time. And I think that's true to Stephen King, because he didn't just write a horror movie. He wrote a coming-of-age story. He wrote The Goonies meets Stand By Me, which he wrote himself anyway. A horror story. He wrote an adventure story. He's a metaphysical, psychedelic, trans-dimensional story about a clown and a traveling turtle.
You'd
you
make
don't
a great marketer.
I do.
You'd
don't
make a
I?
Great marketer.
Thank you.
That one line on it was really good.
Which one?
Transmental.
Transdimensional. Blah blah blah. It's a blah 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 blah. And $700 million.
My next question. Pressure. $700 million. Not $100 million. Not $200 million.
Keep going. No, three.
700.
I know.
And all of you are like, meh, pressure.
And they gotta make that just to pay me. I mean,
wow. That costs.
So it's, you know, the overheads have gone up. Yeah, no, you're paying the adults now. Yeah, it was a lot of money. But again, I'm never really in this business to go and see what's happening at the box office. It is an indication that you've got bums on seats and you always want to find an audience. You don't do this to tell your stories to nobody, you know. But it's not so much about the money, it's just about finding an audience and people getting excited about coming to see. There's nothing better than when it comes around to the weekend and you're wanting to go and see a movie. And it's cool if you're the only one that wants to seek out this little niche movie or whatever. Right. But when everybody wants to go and see it, I had that experience growing up, I'm sure you did, when there was like three channels and everybody would go into school on Monday morning and everybody had watched the exact same five shows.
Right.
And we all talked
not
about
anymore.
It. And like when the original TV version of it came out, yeah. you know, we were all obsessed over it and talked yeah. about it and discussed it. And it's almost like we were all in the same club, and you don't get that much anymore. No. So when something like this comes along and you get a big box office figure like that, what it means is you can have a truly communal experience and share that. Because funny, like a drama or a romance, you can sit there and appreciate it. You don't really know if anybody else is liking it, but with a comedy or a horror, there's a real visceral response that lets you gauge whether it's working or not, because they either laugh or they like jump in fear. And when we all feel like that in the theatre, it's just brilliant coming together.
And you got to work with Stephen King.
I know. It was.
Did you know that was happening? Did they tell you beforehand, or did you pop into the store and there he was?
No, I knew he was coming. In fact, I was really nervous about it because I've worked with novelists before. I've not worked as acting, but they've been come and visit and stuff, mm-hmm. and they've always been like, you're not really how I see the role. And you're like, okay, buddy. I'm going to go do my job. You can sit there and have tea and have people bring you biscuits. All right, thanks for delivering that to me before the cornerstone moment of my performance in this movie. So I was a bit wary. I'm also a fan of his, and I had loads and loads of questions, not even just about it, but other things too, to which he answered generally with, you need to remember I was high as a kite when I wrote all this, and I don't even know. And I'm pretty sure he was just being self-effacing and not right. wanting to talk about it too much. But he was brilliant in the scene. The scene was written in the book, this curmudgeonly old Maynor, and he's brilliant. He's observed that. That's why it exists, because he observed that so beautifully. And so he was actually kind of tailor-made to play that as well. But when we got there on the day, the scene had been cut massively, and all these great like one-liner zingers that were putting me down for being too big for my boots. Like, you know, when you go back to your hometown or your family or your friends, or whatever, feel like they need to bring you down a peg, and you're like, oh, wow, I didn't realise my head was big, but okay, go for it. He's got that going on, and Stephen King definitely brought me down in that scene. But anyway, so all these great one-liner zingers are gone. So I found myself arguing on Stephen King and the character's behalf to put Stephen King's words back in Stephen King's own mouth. I was like, this is so surreal. I feel like you're a literary agent. You know what I mean? It was brilliant. It was really cool.
So I wanted to talk to you about Dark Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do as well as people had hoped. What happened?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. I thought it was better than Apocalypse, mm-hmm. but it got absolutely slaughtered, so I don't know. I don't know why that happened.
Because it was a good movie.
I thought it was a good movie too.
How many movies are you going to do with Jessica Chastain?
15.
15.
I'm thinking roughly 15, 12 or 15. I've done 4 technically with her now, and I do not think I've done more than maybe 12 scenes with her across those 4 movies. I'd like to do a movie where we actually do some acting at each other, and that would be awesome.
How long should Disney wait until they bring X-Men into the Marvel Universe?
12 centuries.
Would you ever revisit it again?
12 times.
And you're going to do the stage.
I'm going to do the stage.
Yes.
I'm going to do it hard. I'm going to give my Serrano. Start rehearsing on October the 14th. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So, can I even ask, like, movies, TV, stage, what's your true love?
When it's good. Mm-hmm. When it's good, definitely the stage. When it's bad, I'd much rather be in a movie. If it was a choice between a bad movie or a bad play, bad movie. If it was a choice between a good version of these things, it would be a good play I'd rather be in. I'd be in a bad movie or a good play.
So you just want things to be good.
Want things to be good. But if they were going to always be good, then plays are a more rewarding and fun experience. You know.
Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You're
cheers.
You're awesome.
Thank you so much.
That was James McAvoy. Now we're going to take another short break, but when we come back, Pennywise himself, Bill Skarsgård. Wait till you hear his theory of why he thinks It, Chapter 2, ends the way it does.
I'm Robert Evans, host of Behind the Bastards, and It Could Happen Here. And boy, it does seem to be happening here. I'm going to guess most of the people listening to this are deeply concerned with what they saw happen in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. And I'm here to tell you it was a fascist insurrection, an attempt by fascists to take over our democracy. And it didn't happen in a historical vacuum. There have been numerous attempts, many of them successful, by fascist movements to take over democracies over the last century. In order to protect yourself, in order to protect your family and your very freedom, you need to understand this history and the history of the different anti-fascist movements that have fought, sometimes successfully, often unsuccessfully, to stop the same things from happening in their own countries. The knowledge of this history is important, and it's maybe the only thing that can save us. So, if you're as concerned as I am, listen to Behind the Insurrections on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's safe to say 2020 was one of the most difficult years ever for so many, and these remain very challenging times. That's why I'm here to ask you, how can I help? My name is Dr. Gail Saltz, host of the new weekly podcast, How Can I Help? With Dr. Gail Saltz, brought to you by the Seneca Women Podcast Network and iHeartRadio. I'm a clinical associate professor of psychiatry at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, a psychoanalyst, best-selling author, and I'm here to help. Join me every Friday, where you can ask your most pressing questions and get helpful guidance on topics ranging from coping with anxiety and mood, relationships, to family and parenting issues, to workplace dynamics, to dealing with COVID fatigue, and everything in between. While it has been a tough time, you don't have to navigate it alone. So, how can I help? You can send your questions anonymously to me at howcanihelp@senecawomen.com, and I will answer with specific advice and understanding. Listen to How Can I Help with Dr. Gail Saltz on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Here's Bill Skarsgård.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. So you're making it the first movie. Did you know you were going to be making two? Was it all like a signed deal to begin with?
Yes, unless I really screwed up with the first one. Which was a possibility. I thought halfway through, I was like, yeah, they're not going to bring me back for... But here we are, two movies in.
When did you know that you got Pennywise right?
The shooting of the first movie felt like the character was kind of coming to plays throughout the whole process of it. And we shot this storm drain scene, which is the opening scene of the first film. We shot that the last day of the shoot.
It was the last day.
Yeah. Wow. I think, you know, we worked on it all day. It was a long scene, and we got to the closest shot of that scene on me and in the storm drain. And, you know, Andy, so we were just like, okay, do it again. And that was also the scene that I auditioned for. So it was a scene that was like so overworked for me. Mm-hmm. Like I'd been having it for so long and right. working on it for so long and tried different things with the character with that scene. And then that take, you know, is we kept rolling. So it was a 5-minute take and everything kind of just fell into place. And we, you know, they were like cut and like Andy came up with and he was, you know, so excited. He's like, we've been doing this scene for not only, you know, a couple of months at this point, but also, you know, 8 hours. And that very last take was just something happened. And I was like, okay, it's good that I figured the character out on the last day of the shoot.
And when did you figure the voice out?
On the last day of the shoot. Yeah, no, a little bit. It was a little bit like that, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, which was weird, but we tried a lot of different things, and we experimented with things even after, you know, and when I was casted, and you know, we even during the days, you know, we were like, oh, what if we try this and what if mm-hmm. we try that and how does this translate and how does that work and everything, and then it was a strange feeling, and it's not, you know, I
I feel it on a lot of, you know, movies that I do. It's like that kind of feeling that you feel it, you figured the character out on the very last day of the shoot. And it's not uncommon, because I mean it is a work in progress. Like, you prepare for it and you come up with all these ideas for it, and then you have to kind of live through it and perform all the scenes in the movie to go like, oh, that's what the character's about. Sometimes you get it when you watch the movie. It's to be funnier. But yeah, I have a bunch of different recordings of you know, early renditions.
You have them?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
of Pennywise and his voice. I mean, there was always something there that kind of ended up being the real voice. But I tried like really low pitch, really high pitch, and then this kind of crackling maniacal thing. You know.
Would you wake up in the middle of the night like with a recorder next to your bed, going, "Wait, I think I know the voice."
Yeah.
And start recording.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it like looking up into the mirror for the first time and seeing yourself?
In the makeup?
Yeah, and seeing yourself as Pennywise.
Well, it was great, because this character is so weird to prepare for, obviously. But one part that was completely new to me was that the makeup and the costume is such a big part of who the character is, mm-hmm. and how he acts and moves and talks and all of that, you know. So I had prepared for weeks without knowing what the makeup would look like on my face.
Just the voice.
The voice. Yeah, no, the voice and the laugh, but like literally filming myself and looking myself in the mirror, you know, with the doing the face, but and everything, but not having it on. So the first time we got it on was for a test shoot, you know, yeah, and you know, the whole process, I think it took probably like 4 hours to apply at that time, because like, we cut it down to two and a half for the first time. It took really long, but in every stage of the way, it was just me sitting, because you know, you sit in front of the mirror, the vanity mirror, watching yourself, and every step of the way, I was like, okay, how does this, you know, work with the, you know, with how does it translate, and what does it look like, you know, I was fascinated. It was like, how does my face translate onto the makeup? So I would do the same thing then. I was just like, I would just film kind of myself doing the scenes and doing things and kind of trying different things, and then look at it later being like, okay, well, that's kind of cool and that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
Because it's almost like you're doing two faces, because you have your face, then you have the clown face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you're working I don't know how to explain it because I'm not an actor, but
yeah.
Like you have this clown face, but you're this kind of human thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you get to see it in the second film without the makeup on, and like it's almost even more unsettling when it's the human looking like that.
Like, oh, that's what he looks like.
Yeah. It's like, oh.
So, where has Pennywise been for over two decades?
He's just hibernating and waiting to get his powers back. There's a you know, the second film is very, you know, strange and abstract in a lot of ways, and rightfully, you know, it's doing justice to the book, which is even weirder and even stranger, like conceptually weird. I mean, a multiverse, and you know, there's a turtle, and there's like a lot of very strange things going on, but there's a section in the book, and you know, obviously we've. All the actors in it, and you know, me personally, have you know, used this book as kind of a Bible and tried to like decipher what you know, the meaning of this book is and what Stephen King meant, and I'm not sure he knows what he meant anymore with it, but it's there, and it's amazing, and it's very out there, but there is a section where there's a short little chapter in the very long book where Pennywise is. It's talked through Pennywise's point of view, you get this like or its point of view, and it's this like very kind of basic, childlike, simple creature.
Like arrested development.
Yeah, well, he's just, you know, you know, and he goes, oh, these stupid kids, and they don't leave me alone, and na na na, and the turtle is dumb, and it's like, it's kind of this, it seems like a child wrote it, right? And, you know, and all he wants to do is sleep and eat and sleep and eat and sleep and eat. That's all he wants to do. So the 27, it was a very long answer to your short question, but like those 27 years when he's been dormant, he's just resting. It's what he loves best, actually. Right. Comes back, he's hungry, he needs to eat, he scares some kids, eats them, and then he goes back to hibernation. And that's what he wants to do, and that's what he has been doing for, you know, millions of years.
How did Pennywise for you change from the first movie to the second movie?
Well, I mean, I wanted to have something like that. The first one was Pennywise in his kind of element. Like it was more routine for him. Like he comes back and he does these things, and then obviously the kids, you know, for the first time he meets kind of adversaries that put him to the test and almost defeat him in the first movie, and that's never happened to him. So mm-hmm. like the last line of Pennywise's last line in the first film is fear. And, you know, the way I wanted it to be is that for the first time, this creature has experienced fear himself for the first mm-hmm. time. So that's sort of his journey in the first movie, that he, this thing that feeds off of fear and scares others. And that's kind of where he exists in you know, your own personal fears. Mm-hmm. For the first time, he's been afflicted by the same emotion, and something changed in that. And then, so coming back in the second one, he's there's something different about him, and being exposed to that. And you know, we just explored a bunch of different things that, you know, may not be too apparent in the final version of the film, but there's a lot of, you know, ideas that I was kind of talking or thinking about as Pennywise kind of coming back, seeking revenge. But there's this kind of masochistic idea that you know, in the very end of the film, where when he does finally get defeated, it might be what Pennywise wanted all along.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I just thought it was a fun idea that you have this evil entity that's just, I mean, everything about what the character is just, you cannot like yourself, right? Like, you're so miserably angry and, you know, maniacal. And he feels like this kind of, you know, cancer. At least me performing it feels like it's just so much bad stuff that, you know, I thought that for that being to exist, maybe what he actually wants, you know, if, you know, maybe existence is a torture for him, a form of torture for him. So him finding the kids, and you know, if you look at it that way, it's Pennywise wanting the kids to bring back the losers,
right,
and them all together
to kill him. Wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, listen, as you said, you know, Pennywise is like a cancer. He's just what is it? Yeah, I mean, it's
yeah.
What is it? Mm. It's vile. But then the movie deals with some really realistic, heavy material. I mean, the movie just opens with this horrendous gay bashing. So there's
yeah.
homophobia, there's domestic violence,
yeah.
there's body shaming, there's suicide.
Yeah.
What do you tell people who are expecting? They're going to go to a horror movie, they're going to be really scared, but it also leaves you thinking about a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the movie is so abstract and out there, right? But the movie opens with something that is so very much a reality, you know, and it's a very real scene, and it's very brutal and violent.
My husband and I looked away.
We yeah, watch. No, but it's and I think there's a point to it that is what you get introduced to, and then that leads into this very kind of over the top, you know, fantastical story. Mm-hmm. But what, you know, it's a little reminder that you know, the it or the evil entity of it and Pennywise kind of lives in all of us, and it does take real root and form in society, and you know, that is a way of setting it off, you know. And I think, I mean, I heard somewhere that, you know, Stephen King initially, like, why he wanted to write the book was because a hate crime like that did happen. You know, that is a very real thing that does happen. And then you get introduced to Pennywise the Clown as kind of the embodiment of that kind of thing.
So your last day on set, how do you say goodbye? What do you grab? What do you take home? Do you cry a little?
No, I'm not very sentimental that way. we did go back and shoot a little bit of additional scenes. So those ended up becoming the last thing that we did with Pennywise. But the last scene I did was the scene. It's funny because I got this question like a couple of days ago, and I couldn't for the life of me remember what the last shot of the movie was. I think I was like, oh, it's my death scene. But now looking back to it, it's like, that's not at all what it was. But so the scene was where when Ben is getting suffocated by all the sand coming in, mm-hmm. and I look down and I go, oh, you're like, and I close the clubhouse, door on top of him. And I go, you fat, fatty little loser. And I shut it and I leave. And that was the last thing that we did. And we played around with it. And Andy Muschietti, the director, he loves filming so much that like he just wouldn't call cut. So it's like, do it again, do it again, do it again. And because he knew that was the last scene, the last take that we would do of the movie, and he was just trying to hold on to it for as long as he could.
That's awesome.
And then finally, he said his kind of trademark thing was his spit, and that means that he's got it. So. As Pennywise, I spat into, or towards the lens at least, and then I handed Andy the buck teeth. So
nice.
So
the teeth.
He has the teeth. And I kind of regret that I didn't take him myself. Now.
Awesome, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank
this
you.
Is great. That was It Chapter 2 star Bill Skarsgård. You can also watch my big-ticket interviews with the stars of It Chapter 2. Just go over to Variety.com. And of course, don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram @MarkMalkin. That's it for this week's Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. See you next week.